Hey guys, I have a special episode of the podcast for today. I'm switching gears a bit and doing an interview, the first interview I've done for this channel. I've been friends with Nate Hiltz of the Dead South for more than 10 years. We both have family ties to the Wadena, Saskatchewan area, more specifically Fishing Lake just outside Wadena. With no touring going on because of COVID, Nate has been spending most of his summer at his cabin at the lake, also where I like to spend a lot of my summer. I figured if we were seeing each other every weekend, having drinks, sitting by campfires, why not use the opportunity to record a conversation about his band, The Dead South? You might have heard there's been a bit of controversy with the band as of late. We actually recorded this conversation in early August before it all went down, so that's why we don't address anything. Fellow player Danny Kenyon is now out of the band due to sexual misconduct allegations. The band had this to say in a statement on their website. Quote, "The Dead South as a band, as a company, as individuals and community members is opposed to and does not condone harmful behavior of any kind." And they go on to say in their statement, "We hope that our action will help in some way to spark healing, and we are hopeful our community will be open to this as a path forward." The statement also went on to say they are, quote, "discussing the impact and future of the song Banjo Odyssey." So what I wanted to do with this interview is to get a behind-the-scenes look at the Dead South, the writing process of some of the songs, more specifically songs off their first album, Good Company. We actually go into the song Banjo Odyssey and what the song is in fact about. Yes, it's about cousin incest, but we talk about how some people have taken the lyrics to mean something else entirely, sparking controversy that it promotes inappropriate sexual behavior. We go into that on the podcast, but we also talk about their other songs, like their hit In Hell I'll Be in Good Company, with over 200 million views on YouTube. It's a slow burn, if you will, slowly getting into the band stuff, how they got started, the dark subject matter in their lyrics and all that, but we started off talking about Fishing Lake, Nate's childhood, and more personal things, somehow mixing in conversations about Jim Morrison, Shania Twain, and Meatloaf even. Beyond the Beat is a part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network, and that is supported by Kinexus. Chances are good this week you got stuck at a train. We've all been there. We all get stuck behind circumstance that seem unmovable, but your finances doesn't have to be one of them. At Kinexus Credit Union, they're more than a bank. They look beyond sales targets, beyond the products you have or the account number you use. They look at movement, motion. They ask themselves, are our members further ahead today financially than they were yesterday? They want your answer to be yes, so why not say yes to Kinexus Credit Union and say yes to improving your financial well-being? Let's move that train. And so without further ado, here's the conversation over a few Jameson whiskeys and a few Ryan Cokes with my friend Nate Hiltz of the Dead South. Well, thanks, Nate, for doing this with me, man.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. I'm going to start off with a little lyric. I like to start off with a lyric quickly. This is from the Dead South. Well, I sat down on the pooper, thinking through and through, sipping on some whiskey, yeah, with a real fat chew. Well, them winds, they are a-blowing wild, while I take this poo, and every man needs a chew. Nate, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, man. Thank you very much.
I guess just for people who don't know Nate, Nate's one of the most humble, down-to-earth guys.
Oh.
And he never likes talking about the band too much. And so I feel like it's almost selfish. Like I get to, it's a treat for me to dive into the Dead South a little bit, so... Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you wanting to talk to me about this. So it's great. Yeah.
I guess we'll start off. You're the singer, guitarist, frontman for the Dead South. You guys have won 2 Junos, 3 albums. You have 3 albums and 1 EP out. I'll just quickly run through the description of the band that's from your website. The Dead South, a Gold Rush vibing 4-piece acoustic set from Regina, Saskatchewan. Infuse the genre's traditional trappings with an air of frontier recklessness, whiskey breakfasts, and grizzled tin showmanship. Their sound, built on a taut configuration of cello, mandolin, banjo, and guitar, speeds like a train past polite definitions of acoustic music into the grittier, rowdier spaces of the bluegrass world. Not bad.
Not bad, yeah.
I want to listen to you guys now.
I wish I wrote that, yeah.
Yeah. Whoever's doing that, I want them hired.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So when did we meet, I guess? We'll start off with we've known each other for, I don't know, what, 10 years or something like that?
Yeah, maybe longer even. Where did we meet? I can't remember. It was probably sitting around someone's campfire.
Yeah.
We probably had to meet a few times.
Yeah, I think you, yeah, you I know you were always hanging around Wadena area where I'm from, and I think just like parties or something like that, and it's been like 10 years or something like that. And you've been at Fishing Lake. You've had a history of Fishing Lake. You kind of, your family is from here. Is your mom's from Wadena, your dad's from Sheho. What's your connection to the Wadena area?
Well, actually, so mom's from Wadena, but they grew up in Fishing Lake, more so on the Milligan Creek Bridge there, right over there. So that was, they were kind of bordering either going to Foam Lake or Wadena for school, and they were just on this side, so they went to school in Wadena. And then eventually, when my mom's dad passed away, they moved into town, into the town of Wadena. And then I guess my connection from there, yeah, like my dad's from Sheho. We'd always come to the lake in the summers before we bought a place. I think I was 8 or 9 when they bought a place originally, and that was down where Melnick's are now.
Right.
But before that, we'd rent places here and there. And then every Christmas, Thanksgiving, any kind of holiday, we were always in Wadena. Most weekends in the summer anyways, visiting grandma and hanging out. So that's the big connection there.
And you grew up in Regina?
Yeah, I went to school in Regina. I was born in Regina. So I just bounced back and forth between Regina and Wadena.
And you'd come here, yeah, like you said, most weekends growing up.
Yeah. Except for in high school when I wanted to party with all the city kids for a while.
Oh.
I know, I took a break. Yeah.
They're dragging you down.
Dragging me down.
City life.
Yeah.
And so you got a cabin, where, just so people know, we're sitting in your cabin now, across the street from your parents' cabin. My parents' cabin is 5 or 6 down.
Yeah, if that. Yeah.
And we're 15 minutes away from Wadena, my hometown. And so why buy a place at Fishing Lake? Why hang out here?
Well, I've always loved it out here. Even when I was a kid, having the experience of a lake or just meeting people at a lake was always fun and exciting, and there was always things to do. Yeah, the city was always great. There's fun things to do there, but this just felt different. And I had a whole different set of friends out here that I loved being around and hanging out with. And I don't know, I feel like this is also home to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think this feels like more home than Regina does a lot of times. Yeah.
Well, I know everyone loves having you out here, you know, and now you're a big rock star kind of thing. And it's all Nate's out here, like dead south. And so in a way, like COVID, it's not the ideal situation, everything going on, but it's kind of cool to have you around. And because we haven't seen you much because you're so busy on the road all the time in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So,
yeah, if COVID's brought anything good to me, it's getting to spend time at home for a little bit.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Time to breathe a little bit. So, yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a little bit of COVID. What have you been up to? I know you've been, you were supposed to be on tour with the Dead South in Western Europe a little bit right now. What were you guys supposed to be doing? What have you been doing since COVID kind of hit in March?
Since COVID hit in March, not much. Basically, we got back March 1st from the UK, and we were supposed to do the Junos on the 15th of March, and we went to Saskatoon. That all got shut down kind of immediately. My birthday happened on March 10th, and then the first case in Saskatchewan happened March 11th.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. It wasn't me, I swear. And then since then, we've been working on some projects with recording. We're delving back into the old stuff, like the old bluegrass. We're doing a bunch of, research and just playing some more old tunes, kind of fine-tuning our skills and stuff and working on different stuff. We've been a lot healthier, just in terms of not having to pack your bags every 3 weeks and be gone for 3 weeks and then come home, then in and out. Just kind of setting consistent routines of being healthy and doing activities a lot. I've been out here pretty much since May, which has been really nice. I think I went back to Regina for 2 weeks. And in those times, I've just been riding my bicycle a lot, and fishing and swimming and playing ball out here and stuff. So, yeah.
I know, like, when the ice was still on, I think you were going for swims when there's a little bit of lake
Yeah.
In May when you're first out here, so.
Going for dips with the ice, yeah.
Getting those cold shock proteins in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They say that you live forever when you do that, so.
Has it been kind of weird, like, you were on the road for 5 years? Like, you guys are well known for being road warriors, like one of the hardest working bands in, you know, Saskatchewan or, you know. Has it been weird to kind of, like, just take a breath?
At first, it was extremely weird, especially with the whole world being what it is, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, the whole world shut down. That's never happened, you know, in our lifetime or even our parents' lifetime.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know, a pretty crazy thing to happen. So that was weird. Sitting down for more than 3 weeks was weird. Now I'm just getting comfortable.
Right.
So
I got a routine.
Now I got a routine, you know.
Yeah.
And yes, I have a huge itch for the road.
You do.
I do. But I'm not done with summer yet. I'm not done with, you know, some stuff done around here. So
once it's minus 40 in the lake here, is it going to be a little different?
I'll probably just be curling.
Curling. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Good Saskatchewan boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up. You grew up in Regina. You said you've been coming to Whittier area ever since you were a kid. What was it like growing up in Regina? What was your childhood like? What was just generally kind of your childhood memories?
Growing up was great. I mean, when I was first born, I don't remember this, obviously. My mom came out of a hard situation, and so did my dad. They both came out of two hard situations and met each other, and they lived in a basement with me for a little while because they didn't have much money at the time. Then they kind of both got government jobs and were working hard and got a house in the northwest end of the city. Grew up just kind of watching my dad play ball, and then I started playing sports and a little bit of music. I went to school in the south end of the city because I was going to a French immersion school, and long story short, I went to Dacre downtown, and that's the only French immersion school they were sending kids to at the time. St. Pius, it's a shout out. So that was really good. I had a good solid group of friends in the south end, good solid group of friends in the north end from where I lived. Got into skateboarding in the north end, a lot of sports in the south end kind of thing. Mm-hmm. My parents were wicked growing up.
Yeah.
You know, they taught me a lot of good lessons, and they were also very good to me. In a lot of ways, if I was being a shithead, can you swear on this?
Yeah.
If I was being a shithead, you know, they would let me know, and you know, they would, definitely let me know. So that was good, and I went to La Boldis for high school, and I really got into downhill skiing for a while. I was a racer, an alpine racer for a bit, and then I got into boxing, and then around the time I got into boxing, I got into volleyball, and then volleyball was kind of my sports career. And I played provincial team and elite club and all that stuff, and kind of started coaching and coached provincial team and stuff like that.
I've seen you play volleyball. You can hit a volleyball, man. I don't know. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I got some skills. That was a long time ago. Yeah, when a guy could jump.
Yeah,
I can set you a ball still.
You're more of a setter
now. I'm a setter. I've always been a setter. Yeah.
I like the spectrum. You got skiing, you got boxing and volleyball. You're kind of hitting all the areas there.
Yeah, like I played it all, but those are the ones that kind of stuck to me more.
Right.
Yeah. And then music didn't start until university. I played a little bit as a kid. I took piano for a bit, then saxophone, started the guitar. Didn't really do much with it. I wanted to play like Nirvana and Zeppelin and, you know, Green Day. And then... when I moved to Quebec, because after high school, I decided to take French education with a second degree in French at the U of R. And then you do 1 year in Quebec at Laval. So I went there. And when I went there, I bought a $25 guitar from some guy on Kijiji. And the people I was hanging out with there at the time, one guy played guitar and he's like, well, yeah, let's jam. So he'd come over and we'd start playing songs. And then when I got home, started a band.
Really? So that's weird to me, because usually you hear this story, like when people are in bands and they're doing well and they're good guitarists, they start when they're young, like 6, 7, they take lessons. So you didn't start it till university?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I played, I took lessons when I was about 9, 10, 11, and I had this wicked guitar teacher, Mike Vancha, and I, you know, the world was in front of me if I wanted to take it. in terms of learning everything he had, but I didn't understand that as a kid. So I never got good at guitar. I never was good at music, really. I had a knack for music because I enjoyed it, and I, you know, I wanted to be a part of it. But even when we first started playing this band, like, I still don't say I'm good. I don't think I'm good at what I do. I don't. Like, you know, this, you look at guys that can play the guitar. That's not me. I can play rhythm really well, sure.
Oh, yeah?
And I can do some stuff, but I'm not great. And in terms of singing, when we first started, we'd do open mic nights, and the microphone would literally be about 2 feet away from me. And I'd be, my head would be turned to the side where you couldn't even hear me.
Yeah,
you
know? Right. Yeah.
It's just one of those things. And then all of a sudden one day I just started getting, well, we would just drink because we were so nervous. So then you'd drink, and then eventually something just kind of started happening the more we would do it. And
liquid confidence.
Liquid courage, you know, and then here's what you have today.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the journey. That's interesting you say that. I'm doing my next podcast on Pearl Jam.
Ooh.
And the early videos of Eddie Vedder on stage, he's literally got his back turned to the crowd, and he's got his hair. Like, he's so
It's very nervous. Jim Morrison of him.
Yeah, Jim Morrison, I guess, would do the same
thing. Those are both my idols.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So what are your influences musically?
That's wide. That's a very wide spectrum. I mean, I listen to everything from like classical music to fusion jazz to garage punk to metal here and there to, you know, folk music to Meatloaf to Neil Diamond to old country. You know, right. It just goes everywhere, right. To the Doors, to the Pearl Jam, to Nirvana. I guess when I was young, though, some bands that always stuck with me through everything, and I still listen to them to this day, are the Misfits, the Doors, and Pearl Jam, for sure.
Really? Those three? Interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of others too, but those three really stick out. I really wanted to be like Eddie Vedder when I was younger, and before Eddie Vedder, I wanted to be like Jim Morrison.
Nice.
But obviously I don't want to be a drug infused alcoholic, you know, like I don't want to be
take the good, not the
bad. The good, exactly, the good. Like, I wanted to be like him. Just, I liked the music he was making. It. I had all of his DVDs and like these box collections of stuff. I just really appreciated it.
I could see the influence a little bit. Like, you got that baritone voice, and I remember when you first started, I always thought you had the voice of like a Eddie Vedder combined with like a Stevie Ray Vaughan. I don't know if
I've heard that before, like the Stevie Ray Vaughan mix with something new.
Yeah, and like it's a deeper, grittier voice, especially like early Eddie Vedder, and you hear the little Jim Morrison in there too, like a deeper tone.
Little deep Jim.
Yeah. I love the Doors too. I love Pearl Jam. And the Misfits, I've never been able to get into the Misfits.
That's okay. I mean, horror punk is its own thing. It's just this realm that you either enjoy or you don't. And
horror punk, it's punk. Kind of a horror, niche. Yeah.
It is a niche for sure.
Yeah. And I've seen you've done like your solo shows, for example, you do a Misfits song. Saturday night, is that what
Saturday
it is?
Night.
I love that one.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think you could do like a country version of a Misfits song, but you pull it off. So.
Oh man, you can do a country version of anything if you really want to. I mean, look at Sturgill Simpson doing In Bloom, right?
Right,
that's
right.
That's a really good version of it.
Yeah. I guess, the world is your oyster, right?
Yeah.
So you talked about like your musical influences. What's your first musical memory? Was there music playing around their house a lot when you were a kid?
Yeah, actually there was. Again, just between like driving between Regina and Wadena all the time, you know, you're plugging the CD player all the time with Shania Twain and, you know, Garth Brooks and Brooks and Dunn.
Have your boots been?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of that, and Anne Murray and Neil Diamond and Meatloaf. That's kind of where I got the start for that stuff. And then eventually I started delving into music myself. And then I got really into, before punk, I was really into classic rock. I really enjoyed Led Zeppelin. I even got into Van Halen for a bit. You know, I don't have the taste for Van Halen anymore, but I still have the taste for Led Zeppelin. Yeah, but it's just how tastes change over time, right?
Yes.
And I got in, I even like really loved Bon Jovi for a bit, you know, growing up, you know,
80s metal,
just when you're
man.
Getting into it, I really liked classic rock. And then I got into 80s metal a little bit. And then from there, like my taste, like I got into rap a lot. I still like rap, but I'm a big like 90s hip hop guy.
Oh,
I love 90s hip hop. You know, I have a soft spot for that. And then I also have a soft spot for, you know, just dirty garage punk.
Nice.
You know, it's just like it, when you hear it, I just get kind of fired up and I want to, you know, start moving. So again, my first musical memory, I guess, to get back to that, would be, one that sticks out for sure is I remember we were painting in my house and I was maybe 5 or 6, maybe younger. We were painting and we're listening to Shania Twain. And my dad, I remember my dad looking at me like, Nate, this is your real mom. I liked it. That one stuck with me forever. So like, okay, Shania Twain could be my mom. I like that. Yeah.
I love that. For people who don't know, I've had a few drinks with Danny, your dad, before, and Bonnie at the lake here. So that fits the bill. Absolutely. That's good. So when you first picked up guitar, what were you playing? What were you just like more of a, like you said, you're more of a rhythm guy. Were you playing more like rhythm to like the Doors, like you say, or something like that? Or?
I became more rhythm. I mean, when I was playing at the very beginning, I was asking to learn songs like Stairway to Heaven, you know, Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple, which weren't really rhythm songs. They were more like a little bit of finger picking, I guess, a little bit of like hitting the notes, a little more intricacies. And then obviously songs like Nirvana, you get a lot more of like the bar chords. So I was getting to that. And then Green Day is a lot of bar chords and stuff like that. The rhythm came later. Because at first, like, me playing guitar was pretty garbage for a long time.
As it usually is for starters.
Yeah, I mean, but way too long. Like, right? Way too long. And it wasn't until I started getting more into bluegrass and country music where I started finding the rhythm and really liking the speed of what I could do. And my speed increased, obviously, the more we played. But I always wanted to be faster and just, like, be able to, like, chug along and just be able to hit notes while I'm getting faster with my rhythm. So that came later for sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I guess that could bring us to the band forming. Is that what kind of gave you the idea to start a bluegrass band? Like, it, I don't hear a lot of like your influences and your favorite bands. There's no bluegrass or anything there. So how did that come in your head? How did it come organically? How did that all start?
Well, I've always enjoyed, I don't know, kind of older country and bluegrass. When I did hear it, I didn't know what it was necessarily. It was there. And I remember when we were young, being around here, there's some guys that had a ton of fiddles and they'd get together and play with, you know, a guy with a guitar and a fiddle, which is so cool. I wish that people said that more around here. But it actually happened when I was in Quebec and I started listening to Trampled by Turtles and Old Crow Medicine Show. And then that sent me down the rabbit hole of bluegrass. And I started just delving more in. And then when I got to Regina, I was listening to Trampled by Turtles one day at my condo I was renting with my roommates. And they brought over a guy from the wrestling team, Colton Crawford. And he's like, "Oh man, I love this song." And I was like, "Me too." He's like, "I actually just got a banjo." And I was like, "Well, man, I've always wanted to be in a band." So we just kind of started going from there. So the idea was to play some sort of style of that kind of music, but it was more so just to get together and play have a banjo in it. Yeah. And then from there, it kind of progressed. So we had actually at the beginning a drummer, electric guitar, and a bass player, myself and Colton. Myself playing acoustic, singing, and Colton on the banjo. And then when the drummer and guitar player moved away, the bass kind of went away with it. And Colton and myself just kept doing open mic nights for a little bit. And that was so nerve-wracking. Like, it was horrifying. You know when people puke when they're nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
What do you do?
I get the other side.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. So whoever was hosting open mic nights.
I get an upset tummy for a while, yeah.
That's okay.
So we'd be sitting there waiting to play, and I'd run to the bathroom like 4 or 5 times, you know? And then, anyways, we kept going. And then Danny Kenyon, who plays cello in our band, he was going to school in Saskatoon, was back for the summer. And I was like, "Hey, Colton, do you mind if my buddy comes and plays cello for just a jam?" He's like, "Absolutely, let's try it out." So then Danny hopped in, and Danny really liked it, and we liked playing with Danny. And then, like, "Oh, maybe we should invite someone else." So I grew up with Danny and Scott. since kindergarten. And Colton met Scott in university, so I brought up the name, and he said, "I know Scott too." Mm-hmm. And then we kind of brought him in, and then that's the four piece that we have today.
There we go. The rest is history.
Yeah.
So if Colton never bought that banjo, would you have, like, it's almost like twist of fate. Like, what would you be, guys be? Would you be a grunge band? You know, like.
Oh, I wouldn't be in a band, probably. Yeah. I'd probably be a school teacher right now.
Yeah. And that's what you're taking for in university, by the way.
French education with a second degree in French, yeah.
There you go. Huh. It's funny how things work out, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you guys, this was around, what, 2012?
Yeah. I met them, Colton, in 2011, right when I moved back. And then we kind of formed this band in 2012.
Yeah. And so things click right away, or is it take a while? When did it realize, like, oh, this is could be a legit thing?
Well, it clicked right away in terms of we all enjoy jamming, and we were getting together often to do it, actually. But when we realized that it's something that we could actually do, was we did one show in Regina at the multipurpose room at the university, and one of our buddies was promoting it, and the whole room was sold out, and people were just having a good time, and we sucked. we sucked. But everyone was there having a good time anyways, yeah. And we got kind of like this boost of confidence, and then I had family in Red Deer, and then we got a show set up at Bo's Bar in Red Deer. So then we went to Red Deer, and people started liking it there too, and then we would come back, and then we play more shows, and then people started singing our words. And then we were kind of like, oh, something's clicking here. This is great. And all we wanted to do, actually, at the end of the day, was we wanted to play O'Hanlon's.
In Regina, it. Right?
That was our main goal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah.
That's funny you say that.
Yeah.
So, when you say people were singing the songs back to you, you released your EP early on. Was that by the time you released your EP, or was this just from people being at shows?
This is from people being at shows.
Really?
Yeah. We released our EP in 2013, kind of the end of 2013, I guess. Yeah, so it was before that that people were starting to sing our songs. But also before we did the EP, we had made basement demos, 3-song basement demos, where we sat down and Scott recorded us one at a time on this program, and we had no idea what the fuck we were doing. So we're down there doing this stuff. And then we'd go and we'd burn all the CDs and we'd write every song down on it. And then we'd go and we'd print labels over top of the CD. And then we'd make labels for the top too. And we'd just hand press everything. And I think they melted in a lot of people's displays if they sat in there too long. Yeah, yeah. But we sold those for donation for a long time, and then we kept that donation thing going for a long time. But yeah, it was before the EP that people started singing our songs. So
that was OG merch.
OG merch.
What songs do you remember?
Ballad for Janoski, Achilles, and Manly Way, I think.
Those are the first three, and they all ended up on Good Company.
Mm-hmm.
What was the...
I think that's what it was, yeah.
Do you remember the first song you wrote for Dead South?
Yeah, it was Every Man Needs a Chew.
So that was what I opened up with?
Yeah.
Well, I sat down on the pooper.
Thinking through and through.
What? How did that come about?
Well, that's actually kind of funny, too. So I ran into Colton. We said we want to start a band. And he came over to jam with Galen, our drummer at the time. And they were downstairs jamming. And I was like, hey, do you guys mind if I hop in on this? And they're like, yeah, sure. I'm like, okay, one sec. I just got to go to the bathroom. So I went upstairs and I was sitting on.
Maybe a little nervous.
I was nervous for sure. But I'm sitting on the toilet. And as I'm sitting there, I'm like sitting down on the pooper thinking through and through. Because that's literally what I was doing, trying to think of words. I wasn't sipping on whiskey and I didn't have a chew in at the time. But the fan was blowing. So that's where the winds are blowing wild. Oh. Yeah. Well, I take this poo kind of thing. And then because every man needs a chew. And I was just kind of going with the rhyme scheme. So I ran downstairs and we kind of, I was like, well, let's try this out. And that's kind of the first thing that we did.
Little did you know, like that one didn't even end up on Good Company, your first album. That was on Illusion and Doubt, right? Mm-hmm. Second album?
Yeah, that's right.
Why not put it on the first one? Like,
I don't know. I think at that point we weren't playing it much. we just kind of forgot about it a little bit. Yeah. And then we remembered it and brought it back, and then we revamped it a bit. So the Every Man Needs a Chew that you hear, if we ever play it live, is definitely different from when we first wrote it, obviously. And the version on Illusion and Doubt is also different because we added in a couple different sections, and we added in Ed Minovich on fiddle there for a bit.
That's he the
does
outro?
Little, he doesn't know. He does a little takeaway. Yeah, he goes into the outro.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and he just starts taking off, yeah.
I think I've seen you guys, just to bring this up, I think I've seen you guys, I'm trying to think of this, 8 or 9 times since you started the band, and it's been interesting to see your growth from, I think the first time I saw you was at across the road where we are right now in your parents' cabin. Mm-hmm. You did a little show with the boys. You didn't have the suspenders or the suit or anything like that. You played right in front of the lake for a crowd of 20, 30 people of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is really cool. And I think your EP just came out, and this is interesting. Nate's got something going on here. Cut to 2019, October, I think we saw you at the TCU Place in Saskatoon, 3,000 people. This sick light show going on, and everyone knows the songs, and people are dressing up like you guys coming to your shows, and it's just been interesting, the trajectory. So is it kind of a mind fuck every now and then? Do you be like, you pinch yourself?
Well, for the longest time, I never had the chance because we were just running.
You're just going. We're
always going, just going. And it's just one foot in front of the other the whole way. So people be like, how does it feel? To have these awards, to do things, to be playing everywhere. And literally I'm like, I don't even know what we're doing. We're just going. How does it feel? I couldn't tell you. It's exhausting. It's fun. It's wild. It's crazy. You know, it's everything. But I had never actually got to experience emotions about it until just recently when we sat down.
Is there some new things going through your head now? Like now that COVID has hit and you've got time to reflect, is there some interesting thoughts about it? Can you reflect on the whole journey so far?
Well, I think what's come to light is that it's very important to take these breaks.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a very long one because right now we're sitting on, I think, 5 months since we last played. And before that was 3 weeks before we last played. Like, that's how it always went. When's the last time we played? I don't know, 3 weeks ago kind of thing. And then you just kept going. So it's important to take that time. I mean, even at one point during this whole ride that we've been going on, Colton had to take a step away from the band because we were just busy all the time. So much that it just occupies your brain. It occupies your sleeping. It occupies your life at home. It occupies literally every aspect of you. And yes, people are going to say, you know, don't whine about it. You have a great life. It's like, yeah, absolutely. We have a great life and we work fucking hard for it. However, at the end of the day, if you can't think straight, what's it all for?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to come out on the other end not feeling good, what's it all for?
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff is really important to think about, and this whole like mental health thing is really important to just keep in mind and be aware of and cautious and do those things like work out, do those things like try and get a good sleep, eat right for a bit, have a little routine, anything, whatever helps you do it, meditate. Because it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this time is really important for that, and we're all just learning how to be healthy all around, mind and body kind of thing.
I can't believe how, like, I remember throughout your whole career, I couldn't believe how much you guys worked, how much you guys were on tour, and you were known as like one of the hardest working bands around. Even when you would say, for example, the Dead South would be on tour in Europe, in the States, you'd have a 3-week break and then you'd be doing your solo stuff in Saskatoon. You'd be like, I can't sit still. And you'd be playing like country shows by yourself. And I'm like, wow, this guy loves it, I guess. I don't know what's going on, but I just thought it was interesting.
That's also kind of a piece of working on myself too. I mean, it's stepping out of your comfort zone and getting really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You're so used to having these blanketed guys,
mm-hmm,
with these songs that you know how to play, and if you mess up, they're there to catch you.
Mm-hmm.
So then you go and you do a solo show and I'm leaking, just sweating buckets. my hands slipping off the cords because I'm so sweaty. I'm so nervous.
Using the bathroom twice before your show. Oh,
four times. Come on. Yeah. And then like I'm forgetting lyrics. I'm forgetting the chords to songs I've played a bunch. And it's just, it's a whole new world. And that's a big step out of a comfort zone. So that was important for me to do as well.
That's interesting. Yeah. So now do you think going forward, does this kind of is a wake up call? I mean, Colton's thing too is probably a wake up call, and like mental health has got to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Touring on the road isn't really natural. You go from city to city. I can't imagine living in a van or in a bus or something like that is now going to be a wake up call to be like, you know what? We're going to take some breaks in between tours.
Well, our wake up call was when Colton came or left.
Yeah.
And even then was still, you had to adjust to get there because you still had a lot of stuff booked and still making it happen. So what we did is we made the rule of three on, three off, or three on and then more than three off. Like, that's fine as well, but just no more than 3 weeks on at a time, because we used to go and we would do somewhere from like a month, month and a half to 2 months going on the road in Europe or something. Yeah. Come home, fly home, and then the next night you're playing in Estevan.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing, and then the next day you're playing in Slave Lake. Like, you're just like, you're like, oh yeah, tour's done. However, we have to go do all these one-offs that we said we'd do. So that wasn't resting. So that was a wake-up call. So setting this regiment of three on, three off was kind of our, let's try this and see how it goes. And that's been working great. Everyone, and we check in with each other. We know, like, we've really learned how to talk to each other about this stuff. Like, how is everyone doing?
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys thinking?
Mm-hmm.
If someone says that they don't want to do this, then we're going to have to reevaluate what we're doing and then make an adjustment from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see how, like, a member leaving your band would be like you'd kind of like take a step back and be like, okay, what's going on here? What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
And like living on the road, man, like I can't imagine, like I'm in a band now and you dream of like playing shows and going touring and stuff like that, but you don't see the other side of it. You see you playing Prague and Berlin and, you know, Amsterdam, all great, those, but you're not really seeing those cities. You're in a van seeing the in between kind of thing.
You see the highway getting in, you see the city driving in.
Yeah.
You might get to walk around a little bit, grab a sandwich, hopefully maybe a coffee, and then you see the venue, and then you might see a bar afterwards, and then you're out. That's it.
Nice highways in Europe, though, I imagine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Beautiful, the Autobahn.
Right, Autobahn, yeah.
Something great. Else.
I always think, like, how did guys in the 80s do coke and like booze and drink Jack straight out of the bottle and sing on stage for 2 hours?
I can't answer anything but the drinking liquor straight out of the bottle thing. That's it, because I'm actually, I don't know if the proper word is proud, or maybe it's that I'm too scared to, but drugs have never really been my thing. Mm. Like, yeah, I'll smoke weed here and there. Mm, fuck yeah, that's just fine. And smoking weed here and there is actually kind of good for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But in terms of hard drugs, never got into them. And I don't know. Maybe I'm scared that I'd like them too much, or just that it just doesn't do it for me. So
it's something you see nowadays, that cliche of like you need to be the rock band that parties hard. It's kind of...
Oh, you can't do that anymore, because...
It kind of withers away. It's withering away, that kind of cliche, I find.
It's totally withering away, because now you're just seen as a dirtbag if you do that. Yeah. Oh, that guy, all he does is cocaine and drinks liquor and sleeps with people. It's like, yeah. That used to be cool.
Right.
Now it's like... That guy needs to get a life.
Dude, settle down. Yeah.
Go to bed.
Back, like, to swing it back to Jim Morrison, though, he managed it pretty good.
Yeah, a totally different life. Different time. Yep. Yeah.
Have you ever seen that Hollywood Bowl show where he's like, I think he's on LSD and he's got a dragon. He's imagining dragonflies.
Yeah.
So he's like grabbing them. These dragonflies.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's some weird stuff. But speaking of Jim Morrison, one thing that always, I don't know, fascinated me was how he would sing backwards. Like, he was so nervous, and he would just stand and face the back wall and people would go nuts.
I wonder if that's like needed to have that modesty and maybe that nervousness to get something good. You know, you don't see a lot of, I don't know, artists that are very confident in their abilities. I find when you dig down into artists in their personal lives, they're very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's part of being an artist and creating good art.
Well, art is vulnerable. Like, you're putting out something about you, whether it's a thought, whether it's a skill or an ability, you're just putting it out there for people to now judge. I don't know, you kind of, when I was young, I had the mindset that, you know, people putting it out there was just like something fascinating. Mm-hmm. No matter what it was, a painting, even if I didn't understand it, it was just fascinating that people were doing that. I couldn't believe that they were doing it because it's so cool and spectacular to be doing that. And even so much that enough people want to see it and listen to it and be a part of it. What a cool thing. Mm-hmm. And then as you get into this scene a little more, or even just growing up in this whole, new world of the internet, you see so much hate for everything that people are doing. And that's so sad. It's so sad. It takes so much for people to put stuff out there and to, you know, give a piece of yourself and to have people just shit on it because they can sit behind a keyboard and feel like they're a champion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a tough thing. But there's always that vulnerability when you're doing art. There's always an insecurity because you just don't know how it's going to be taken. I don't know. Maybe some people are super confident when they do it, but
I don't think that makes great for great art, though. You know, like for great artists, like going back to Eddie Vedder, like researching their album 10, Eddie Vedder was this happy-go-lucky guy, but he laid his heart on his sleeve in their songwriting. You got Black, this dark, heartbreaking song. You got Alive about his troubled childhood and the hatred for his stepfather. And he didn't realize at the time that this was going to go out to millions. He just thought, this is a cool band. I'm going to write some songs and we'll play some smaller shows. Mm-hmm. And once, you know, Jeremy hits and it's the biggest song in the world and people are dressing like him and this whole grunge movement. And you see like the darkness, like he was so, you could see the pain in his eyes from like, he didn't realize this was going to go out to the world and people are going to interpret it and judge him for it and critique it. So I think it's such an interesting take, and you see it now tenfold with social media.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's got an opinion on Instagram.
Yeah. You know, and it's such a funny thing too, because why do you have to judge everything? You can like it and not like it. That's a big thing. You don't have to go and spray it everywhere.
Yeah.
Your feelings for how much you dislike something. I don't know. That's just my opinion, but what do I know?
Yeah. People don't realize how hard it is to, you know, express yourself and, like you said, be vulnerable.
Oh, I mean, even if you look at us, like the Dead South, most of the songs we wrote, especially the very beginning, thought zero people would ever hear because this was just a jamming band in a basement. And then it gets put out there and it's a whole new world and it's fun and it's different. It's exciting and people love it. People hate it. Everything, all of the above. You just never imagine that those things will happen.
Yeah, you don't picture that at the start, eh?
No. No, you don't.
That's right.
You wanted to play O'Hanlon's.
That's right. Let's go back to O'Hanlon's. Love O'Hans. I've had some good times there.
Oh, I've had a few too many.
let's go back to kind of the history of the Dead South. You put out your first EP. Things are picking up steam. Let's go to Good Company now. So the first EP, The Ocean Went Mad and We Were to Blame. That comes out in 2013, you said?
Yep.
What's the time frame between that and Good Company? Where are you at in the band? What's your mindset?
That was not a very big gap. We did the EP, and then months later, we're like, let's get a full album going now. Because we had the songs ready. We just thought now's the time. So 2014, we put out Good Company. We had played a lot more shows in that amount of time because, like you said, we were busy guys. We were yes men. I've said this on many interviews. Like, people will ask, what did you do? We said yes to everything. And that really made a difference, especially in our playing and our abilities. So we went in to Good Company with with that mentality of being yes men.
Mm-hmm. And that results in a lot of shows, a lot of hours on the stage.
Yep. A lot of opportunities, a lot of just good stuff.
You credit that being yes men to just kind of opportunities evolving and just coming up in front of your eyes?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we were that fortunate band that didn't have to book gigs. We were getting booked all the time. We didn't have to look for work. People were looking for us. And that was really cool. And it was fun, and it made stuff easy. Made stuff easy. And it made us a lot better in terms of our playing abilities and our comfortable mindset of being with one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the songwriting process for you guys? So you see like a band like Chili Peppers, for example, mm-hmm. Red Hot Chili Peppers. I love the Chili Peppers. They go into in a rehearsal room for a month or two, and they just jam. They just record everything they play 8 hours a day. They're just seeing what else they can come up with, different parts, and they're jamming, and they're just saying, oh, maybe that's a good little chorus there. Maybe we could add that with this little part we came up 2 days ago. Other people write lyrics and put that to a melody that someone else wrote. What's your songwriting process?
Well, I wish we had a month or two to sit in a place.
Right.
Because that would be actually, that would be amazing. Just to see what came out of that. Maybe we'd be the Chili Peppers. No, I'm just kidding. But
you have to get good tube socks.
That's right. Good tube socks. Yeah. But our writing process, it's changed over time, especially because at the beginning we had more time to jam. However, it's always kind of been the same, where we either go off of a skeleton of a song that someone's brought, or we build around a riff, or we just sit and jam and see what happens. So for example, on the last album, Alabama People, we wrote really drunk one night. It was just, we sat down and started playing, and we just like, let's just put this on there kind of thing. Broken Cowboy, I wrote by myself, and that's the only song that hasn't really been touched by the other guys. Like, it's just, that was one that they all said, let's just leave it as is. I didn't want it on there. They kind of twisted my arm to put it on there.
Really?
So that was one thing. And then, so then you go to other stuff. You go to Traveling Man or something. Scotty will write Traveling Man. He brought a whole song, a whole skeleton, and we just built into it. We might have given a couple of suggestions here and there, and that's kind of how stuff goes. There's no actual pattern. Mm. It's all just depends on what you're bringing to the table and how everyone feels about it and how we work with it.
You don't have a cookie cutter process.
Nope, there's no cookie cutter process. And I think that's the best thing about it.
Right.
It's not like, hey guys, here's what I did today. Now work on it.
Right.
It's no, everyone's got their own perspectives, their own ideas. And we are all open to suggestions, and we all listen, and we don't get butthurt over, like, I don't like that very much. Let's try something else. You know, that's sometimes it might be frustrating when you really like something.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's a little frustrating. You're like, I really like that. And they're like, I don't. So it's like, okay, then what's better? Mm-hmm. Like, well, why don't we try this? And then you hear it and you're like, hey, that is better actually. You know, it's just about being open and not letting your ego take control, because when ego runs your show, you're kind of a loser. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like you're a loser. Like, you are literally just losing by not letting yourself be open.
That's the toughest thing in a band, the dynamics and how you deal with the personalities and the egos. It seems like you guys have a great setup. Like, you guys seem to be good friends. I've met all your guys, Danny, Scott, and Colton. Everyone's super nice, down to earth. How is everyone kind of the same, that same mindset of like, you know what, the sum is greater than its parts. Music comes first.
Big time.
Ego side.
So everyone has their own little things. Ours is, we have a mandate, I guess. I don't know if that's the proper term for this right now, but it's like, we're friends first, then we're a band, and then we're a business. And the business was never even a thought. That just kind of had to develop over time. The better you do, the more you have to keep up with all this other bullshit that you don't even think of when you're starting a band. So friends first, then a band, then a business. And that is some of the best advice that I can give to anyone in this kind of setting, because, so we're friends. an issue comes to the table. Okay, well, how do you guys feel about this? Three guys say, I like it, I like it, I like it. The next guy says, I don't. Okay, why don't you? Well, this is this. Well, what do you guys think of that? Well, he's got a good point, you know, and he cares the most about it. So maybe we just go that way then. It's not like you just shove people around. You just listen to what everyone has to say. We're friends. Mm-hmm. We take everyone's feelings and considerations into it, and we just make it work.
God, that's such a good thing to have.
And oh, like, it's we're so rare, lucky.
You know, like even you say communication. That's such a, you know, it's easy to say, but hard to do. It's a, you don't see that, and you see that demise of so many bands because of that.
Well, good news is about that. We have no animosity towards one another. We don't feel like we're in a power battle. We're all just four dudes, four people who, you know, have the same goal. We want to keep playing music because we like it. We have a career out of it. We'd rather be playing music than doing a lot of other things. And we're having fun while we're doing it. So why not do it with your friends?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, you got a good thing going. Maybe we should get into the album Good Company. I guess we discussed how your demos kind of came into the Good Company fold. I guess that answers my question. My question, was there any overarching themes going on? Do you ever have like an idea? I guess you're so early in a band. Is there anything coming together at that point when you're going into writing an album?
No, at Good Company was just the songs we had at the time. That's right. And same with the EP. It's like the songs you had at the time. Yeah. I remember when we only had 6 songs. Then I remember when we only had 9 songs. And you're playing a show and you're like, these guys want 2 sets. These guys hired us for 2 sets.
What covers do we know?
What do we do now? Scotty, play Oasis. Yeah. So we just kind of made it work. But yeah, at that point, there was no theme, no nothing. It was just, these are the songs that we have, so let's put them down. And that was awesome. It was just such a raw thing. Mm-hmm. It was us being very naive, being very young, being, I don't know, everything awesome that you can think of, because it's just having fun.
You're just jamming.
You're just jamming. You're playing. You're recording for the first time. Right. You know, you're putting out an album. Mm-hmm. Meatloaf puts out albums, you know. Zeppelin puts out albums. Meatloaf, the Doors. Yeah. You'll laugh at Meatloaf all you want. That guy was incredible. That first album blew everyone away.
Is that Battle of Hell?
Battle of Hell.
Okay.
Blew everyone away.
I've only been able to get into Embarrassing Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
That's on the first album.
Heater. Love that
album. That's a heater. That whole album's a fucking heater.
Is was it 2 out of 3 ain't bad?
2 out of 3 ain't bad, yeah.
Is that on there too?
Yeah. Baby, we can talk all night.
My dad liked Meatloaf so much. He didn't have one copy, but he had 2 copies.
That a boy.
On a CD, and I remember looking at that album cover. Like, what is going on? This guy's on like a motorcycle or something.
Flying out of hell.
Love it. Should we get into a little bit more of the songs, if that's cool with you?
Yeah, sure.
Good Company. Let's start with one of my favorites, The Recap.
Ah.
Is that a Nate Hilt song?
That is. Yeah.
Do you remember writing that? Do you remember anything?
I do, actually. So I remember having kind of a chord progression going and kind of a storyline with it that I was working on a little bit. And the storyline was just kind of a bar fight scene with taking real events, but also fictional events, and just kind of putting it into a nice dark story, like a tragedy. I'm a big fan of tragedies. I don't know what it is about them. They catch my eye and I'm just into them. And then Scott had this little riff, ding, 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 yeah, ding,
intro.
And when I showed him that and he showed me that, I remember one day I was jamming his little riff out because I liked it so much. I'm like, Scott, this is the same key and everything. Do you mind if I actually take that from you and we make a song out of it? And he agreed. And then from that came The Recap.
I like it. I'm just going to read off a little of the, just a quick lyric. I think it's from the chorus. Well, I've been drinking here for so many damn years, trying to recap my life. Every night trouble finds my sight, and I can't help but fight. With a bottle of Jack and a tin of Skol, tonight I'm going home. Today's the day a man put me away, and I can rest my soul. You got, like you said, tragedy. There's a tragedy written all over this. You see that in the whole album. There's alcoholism. There's, like you said, a guy just down on his luck. You see a lot throughout the album. Is that like kind of a theme that you kind of have in your head when you're writing some of these songs? And obviously fictional. I mean, like...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fictional and it's real. It's whatever you want it to be. But I guess I get a lot of inspiration just from like watching Western movies, you know, Quentin Tarantino movies, yeah, stuff like that. But also just putting little facts in along the way, just kind of seeing, you know, just placeholders kind of thing. And the whole tragedy thing, I don't know. I think when I was writing that song, actually, like the lyrics, I was just picturing a guy sitting at the bar, you know, probably at O'Hanlon's. That time it was like heavily, that was my stomping grounds there for a while. And just thinking of just a bad time. And like that part that I wrote about himself, when a man put me away, the only man that could actually put him away was himself.
Yes.
That's what it actually is talking about. No one could ever beat him, so he just killed himself, kind of thing.
Yeah,
because he was just aching to die.
Yeah,
yeah.
Down on his luck and just depressed and he can't help it, but just diving into the bottle and yeah. I see a lot of that. The theme in Good Company, dark lyrics, but even like for the recap, it's like uplifting music almost. Mm-hmm. Like a do like with Danny on the cello. You see that for Ballad for Janoski, that Bastard Son. It's just these dark lyrics. That's the kind of thing I love about music too. Like just how they can disguise these dark songs. Like you think of a song like Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind.
Yeah.
Just the song of the summer. We're having fun on the beach. It's about crystal meth. And
I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's about like overdosing on crystal meth.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's dark.
But anyway, let's go to the next one then. I love the recap. By the way, I've been to a lot, like I said, a lot of Dead South concerts and live shows, and I like to do the big chanting before the
Yeah, you're the guy out there for sure.
It reminds me of just a quick story. When you guys were playing at the casino in Regina, I remember it was New Year's one year, and I got too liquored up.
That doesn't happen often.
The one occasion it happened, eh? And I remember I got liquored up, and it was like a show of 2,000 people, and I took my shirt off, and I was like waving my shirt around, and I wake up the next day, and I'm so embarrassed, and you were busy touring, so I didn't see you for another 6 months, and I'm like, hey, man, 6 months later after the show at, I think it was in Connexus Arts Center in Regina or something like that, or the casino.
Casino, right? Yep.
And I say, hey, man, oh, that show at the casino, New Year's, was so awesome. You're like, yeah, I know. You had your shirt off the whole time. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, but in a good way. I was happy for you, by the way.
I was like, I didn't think you saw that.
No, that's the kind of stuff I like seeing. When someone's having just a great time, they're excited to be there. Yeah. That's a good thing. You know?
Sing along.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's a good stuff.
Then you wake up and you're like, yeah. Drank too much. Let's go to Honey You, another one of my favorite Dead Cell songs. This one's like a rare one on Good Company where it's not so dark. It's like it's almost like I'd say probably the most radio friendly song you had on Good Company. Do you remember writing that? What are your thoughts on Honey You?
I'm kind of blanking here, but I think that Honey You was actually on the EP as well.
Question. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just banjo. But Honey You, I do remember writing that one. And when I wrote that song, it was about nothing at all. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I literally was sitting in a room and was just looking around and started strumming this chord pattern. And then, Honey, you are a rock. Wow, that sounds pretty good. And I am your man. I'm like, okay, all right. And just started writing down lines. And then it just kind of became just this song that we just loved playing. It it was just had a good kind of rhythm to it. You could kind of like head bop with it, and people really took on to the lyrics, which was awesome. There was no deep meaning to this one at all when I wrote it. It was not like a, you know, someone actually sent me a message once and said, I think this is about Noah's Ark. And, you know, I don't mean to laugh at anyone for their interpretations, but that was so far out of my mind when I read it. I kind of like had a little, you know, when puppies tilt their head a little bit, that's right. I'm like, huh? Yeah. Okay. So that's a new thing. People are interpreting our music now. So that song is very special in that way, where that was the first song that people started interpreting to me. They'd send me messages or to the Dead South, and they would just talk about what they think the song means, and it was really cool. But yeah, when I wrote that song, it was kind of, I was thinking it is on good or on the EP because that's what the title is.
Yes,
the Oshawa Mad and Weird to Blame.
That's the big line in it.
You think the guy interviewing me would know this? You know?
God, do some research.
Yeah. No, but yeah. And then the whole line about that was, I was just kind of thinking of, I don't know, just, again, a tragedy came to mind. You know, I was thinking, I think something might have been going on in the world at that time. Maybe it was oil spills or something. And I was probably watching some post-apocalyptic show on TV. And it was just kind of like, man, you know, the world's going to dry up. It's probably Book of Eli or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. Like, is that the world we're going to live in? You know, the ocean went mad and we were to blame. You know, we just litter all the time. Everything goes into the ocean. We're just killing shit left and right. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. You know, we have no thought process to what our consequences are going to be for our actions in terms of that stuff. So that's kind of where that line came out.
I love it. It paints great pictures in the listener's mind. There's great visuals. Even like Achilles, sorry.
Oh, I'm actually going to add this just for your hop songs. Simon and Garfunkel was a huge inspiration for me growing up.
Oh.
Listened to a lot of Simon and Garfunkel. My mom was a huge Simon and Garfunkel fan. I'm just going to fill this as an Easter egg for you who want to listen. But if you go listen to Simon and Garfunkel and you know the song I'm talking about, which could possibly refer to this song, let Jared Lennon know. And we're going to go from there.
Okay. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
I like Simon and Garfunkel too.
So good.
Helplessly Hoping.
Oof. And then even Paul Simon after by himself.
Yeah.
Oh, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Damn, that's good song. Yeah.
He was so innovative too.
Oh, fuck yeah. He's still going.
Yeah.
Still writing albums.
Yeah. They're great, those harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring up just a lyric for Honey You as well. Like you said, it's nature themed almost. Similar, like Achilles, I get a little bit of that too. Not Achilles Last Stand, that's something else. Achilles, nature themed. For Honey You. Honey, you are a rock and I'm your land, and we will grow before the sun dries up and turns us to sand. Do you remember when the ocean went mad and we were to blame? We ran to another world with lives to save. So great visuals, paints such a good picture in the listener's mind. It's almost like a love. The way I interpret it, it's kind of what I do on this channel.
Which you should do.
It's almost like a lead character remembering past hardships with a girl, of them getting through it through these metaphors of nature and saying, we got through so much already. Why can't we just continue on? And this girl's had enough because there's been so many hardships.
That actually is a great analogy.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that's good. I'll take that.
Interview's over.
No, that's great. And like I said, like one of your most radio-friendly songs and like a concert staple.
I actually like that you ran there with it because, that's probably a lot of stuff I was thinking of too. I mean, a lot of times when I'm writing stuff, it's fictional. But then again, I always add in some sort of reality to it. And you know, it could be relationship troubles, it could be all this other stuff, and yeah.
Love it. All right, let's go to one more song. No, second last song. My favorite Dead South song of all time, the biggest heater at their shows. Everyone just goes insane. Banjo Odyssey, From, like you said, your first EP. What do you remember writing about this? Obviously, it's about cousin incest.
Yes, it is.
Coming out of left field, what do you remember? Like, why? How did that come up?
All right. So that's a great question. So Banjo Odyssey was actually written right around the time of Every Man Needs a Chew, which was with the original band with a drummer, a guitar player, like electric guitar, bass player.
Oh.
And a lot of the stuff was actually written by our guitar player at the time, too. I wrote the chorus. Mother said she's my brother's daughter. And yeah. I don't even care who's, or I don't even know who's my father. But he kind of wrote the other stuff and we just kind of built the song around it. And again, it was like just a super tongue-in-cheek song about two cousins that love each other. Their parents don't want them to be together. So they have to get away as fast as they can. And again, this is like really early songwriting. So we don't know how to really put stuff together and make a story what it is. But yeah, I think with the banjo lick that Colton wrote,
so good,
with the kick stomp just hitting in there the whole time, it gives that nice proggy, almost heavy flow right off the get-go, and then the guitar hits boom, boom, and all of that combined with the lyrics of these cousins that love each other, you know, this incest thing, it's just people get off on it a little bit. And
I just think of it as so bold. Who's writing about cousin incest? Who's got this? Like, I've heard you guys talk about Colton coming up with this. It's like a metal lick on guitar, and he just transferred it to the banjo.
He's a metalhead, man. Like, that guy is so talented. It's disgusting.
I love it. Like, it's like a head bob or like almost like a Pantera song or something like that. Like, you kind of quickly touched on the chorus there. I'm just going to read the lyric, how it opens, and I love just the opening. It just paints this great picture, sets the story straight. It starts with, tore up the restraining order. I don't care, I'm coming over. What your daddy said isn't going over too well. Don't you know not to kiss and tell? Mother said she's my brother's daughter, and I don't even know who's my father. I guess she's my cousin, but she needs some sweet loving anyway.
That's right. So that whole first part is people get upset. They're like, oh, that's really bad. You're talking about tearing up a restraining order because they think that it's against you for harming someone. That's not the case at all. The whole thing is the parents put the restraining order on the guy because they want him to stay away from their daughter because they're cousins.
Right.
Yes, that is fucked up. Sure. That shit happens. This is a story.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Like it. Don't like it. That's up to you. You have the choice not to listen or to listen. So bravo. Mm. Yeah. And then the whole theme of it is like people question the lyrics in the chorus thinking, well, can you read it back to me?
Mother said she's my brother's daughter.
Yeah.
And I don't even know who's my father. I guess she's my cousin, but she needs some sweet loving anyway.
So people question the lyrics, but they're not reading the lyrics properly when they're reading it to themselves. It is always going to be your cousin in that sense. Yeah.
It's almost like true love prevails. Even if we're cousins, they love each other.
They love each other. Yeah. And no restraining order that your parents set is going to stop your love for one another.
Yeah. That shit up.
Yeah. Like it or don't, shit happens. Yeah.
Like I said, I love this. This is my favorite Dead Cells song.
You know what? I go back to this stuff and I think about it because people are always questioning and thinking what it's like. This is just Shakespeare. And I'm not saying I'm Shakespeare, but it's like I'm actually kind of feeding off of these kind of stories a little bit. You know, these are love stories. These are tragedies, stuff that I grew up reading and watching in movies and all this other kind of stuff. It's the same stuff just put into a different storyline. That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day. Or it's just different situations. And no matter where you look, everyone's got a whole different story of something that's happened in their life.
Dude, like you're reading Hamlet in grade 10 or Romeo and Juliet, like, you know, like
everything,
all that shit's dark.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you could say Banjo Odyssey is the Romeo and Juliet of our time.
Yeah. There we go. Hot take. Going to the lead singer, Dead
Cells. I'm very ironic, by the way. Don't don't quote me on that. We'll
Okay, the last song I wanted to go into, the big one, the doozy. You've had 199 million views on this video the last time I checked. Is that good? I don't know. Not bad. Not a big deal. Yeah. In Hell, I'll Be in Good Company. Wow. This one went crazy on YouTube. Got a great video, catchy song. Do you remember writing this one?
Yeah. So this was a cool one. It came out of nowhere, meaning we were supposed to have a jam one time and Scott Pringle didn't show up. That's a call out, by the way, Scott, you know it. Figured out. And he might've had a reason. I don't remember that part, but, it's funnier to just have it this way. But, yeah, we were sitting there and jamming. And then I remember looking at Colin and Danny and just saying, I think we need a song with just cello and banjo. And right away, Danny started plucking these chords and Colin just started riffing on it. And then Danny started whistling. And I was like, that's it.
Oh.
That's it. That's exactly what we need to do. And I'm not taking credit for this song because they clearly did this. But I was super pumped as soon as I started hearing this. And yeah. And then Danny wrote the lyrics to the song and the lyrics were awesome.
Danny wrote the lyrics.
Oh, yeah. This is a Danny lyric song. And it was just so fun to sing, and it was also fun to not be doing what I'm doing every time, like playing guitar. So me and Scott, we started, you know, dancing a little bit and snapping and stuff, and that all kind of progressed. And yeah, the video was perfect too, because we were in Toronto for Canadian Music Week at the time, and we were going to do a Banjo Odyssey video, which was playing 9 shows in 9 hours or something like that. On a flatbed truck where we would just drive around the city and we'd stop traffic and we'd start playing until nice. We got booted or we just ran away. And then once we'd done that, our buddies from Two Brothers Films, who Zach and Dustin, who just kick ass and they're so fun to work with and just all around great people. They're like, well, since we're here, why don't we try something for In Hell as well? And we said, that's perfect, because this is also a video we've wanted to do. And he's like, here's the idea. You guys just do what you do all the time. And we're just going to get you in different spots all around Toronto. And then when we go back to Regina, we'll do some of the Regina shots. And we storm chased for a while.
I see there's like gray clouds in some of the shots.
This is what pisses me off on the commentary. People are like, this is green screen. Oh, that was edited in. No. Everything is 100% real. Really? We storm chased to find a fucking storm. And then there was a rainbow. That worked out perfectly. We were, you know, we went to all these different locations. We did this dance over 200 times for this video, mm-hmm. You know, like stuff like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's all said and done. We thought nothing of it. What a fun idea we had. Zach and Dustin, awesome. Good idea. Let's go hang out after. Let's have some beers about it. Then we release it. And it actually does better than most of our other videos right off the hop, which is cool. And then it gets put onto the front page of Reddit.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
And we didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And then it gets put onto the front, onto this bluegrass blog on Facebook. And then it gets put back onto Reddit. And then everything keeps happening and circulating and getting more clicks and likes, and everyone's like, ah, these guys are paying for shit. We don't pay for fuck all. We, you know what, who's paying for it? You are, by clicking on it.
Yeah. I love the comments, because I always see it on Reddit like every 3 months on the front page or on Listen to This, And everyone's like, oh, I love this song. This is great. And some people are like, this dude, this has been on here for like 8 times in the last year. Like, what's going on? And it's just people. Love the
people sharing it.
It's so unique though and original. I think that's what gets it. It's so simple, and you got the whistling, you got the catchy cello, and the great melody.
Yeah,
simple.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff about it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, you know. And at the end of the day, it's just a fun song. You got some different whistling, you got some dancing, you got some ooze. You got some good lyrics. You got some different change in voices too with the different singing. And, you know, people like it, which is cool. And people are clicking on it because it's different. They're sharing it. And actually, a lot of the people that are upset with it are creating more traction by complaining about
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. They're complaining about it. Like, I don't like this. It's like, well, that's fine. You don't have to like it. Also, you don't have to say that. But now that you have said it, other people are looking now.
Yeah.
Because you're now creating more of it. And yeah, at the end of the day, we haven't paid any money for this to be publicized. It's all by the click of a mouse that everyone's doing.
199 million views last time I checked. That's like Miley Cyrus. That's freaking Justin Bieber level right there. When you wrote it and recorded it, did you have a thought like this was like maybe on another level? This could be like a huge, not huge, but like a little bit better of a radio hit or something like that?
No. I think that when it was written, it was known right off the hop that it was something just different and fun for us. Like, again, like I was saying, we're not playing it. Two guys aren't playing instruments. We're just snapping our fingers and dancing a little bit and doing like some oohs, which is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. You
know, our little contribution to the song was snapping fingers and saying, ooh, you know, like that was our contribution. Like that was just a lot of fun. Did we think anything of it? No, not at all.
Yeah. And that's what you hear most people say. They always have an idea of what the hit song of an album will be. And it's something totally different.
Yeah.
That's usually the case. I want to read off a quick little line just because what you said, Danny wrote it and it's great lyrics, catchy, great melody. Let me find it quick. By the way, when I was looking up for research for this song, someone wrote down an interview you guys had. Danny was explaining the meaning of the song. He said, quote, for the meaning of In Hell, In Good Company, he said, quote, it's about a man who murders his cheating wife and is super stoked to go to hell with her. And it sounds grim.
It sounds grim. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. And that's a cool thing, too. It's another tragedy. Danny took our theme and ran with it really well. This is a great song. It's a great story. Whether you like the song or not, it's a good story.
It is.
Whether you agree on the ethics of the story or not, it's a good story.
Yeah.
It's just great.
I'll let me just read a little line here. It didn't hurt, flirt, blood squirt, stuff shirt, hang me on a tree. After I count down three rounds, in hell I'll be in good company.
Like, who else is saying that shit? No one. Danny Canyon, everyone.
Love it.
That guy's a genius.
So visceral, just well written, and catchy. And like we said, we talked about earlier, just disguising dark lyrics for catchy music.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. That's right there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I love the, by the way, for this one, you guys... Crack a beer.
Yeah, we added that in, cracking a beer.
So what's that all? How did that start?
It became a percussive thing. So in the very beginning, I can't whistle very well, but... So instead of just letting it be the whistle intro with just a whistle, we decided to throw in... And then we sip and dance.
So you, Scott, and Colton each crack a beer.
Yeah, so there's three cracks.
And this is Danny playing the
Danny's cello. Just playing the bass line and whistling. And then that gave us a little break where we could just, you know, have some fun, have a beer.
Yeah. And it seems to always be a Pilsner. Maybe I just see in Saskatchewan.
Well, it was Pilsner for a while because Pilsner was on a rider. So,
yeah.
Or else we'd have to sneak Pilsners into the venue.
Oh.
Depending on where you're playing it.
You're going to... Germany, sir, you got 40.
Yeah, you're not getting Pilsners there. No. You're getting the real good Pilsners. You're getting like Pilsner Raquels, but those are bottles. You know, you're not getting the same can. So it actually was a difficult situation for a while because we implemented that in, but you go to places like Europe and they don't have cans a lot of these venues. It's mostly bottles because bottles are more popular, but some of them also have pop tops.
Oh.
So pop tops are sick if you get the pop. Otherwise, it goes. It just flips over and nothing happens. Yeah.
You're like, God damn.
Yeah.
We got to come up with something here.
Yeah, pretty much. So
I never thought
it was just a little addition.
Well, dude, like good company. That was like our first real introduction of what the Dead South was. And you kind of notice a maturity in the band since. Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, I see... kind of a theme for Good Company, but then you see Illusion and Doubt, which was your second full album, and you see more lighter songs, more kind of, and this is my interpretation, so take it with a grain of salt, but like more of like a harken back to the old school bluegrass country, and same with Sugar and Joy. Is that what, how have you matured and evolved?
Well, I would say that Illusion and Doubt was more of experimentation. We brought in a little bit of pedal steel. We brought in a little bit more of just, like there's still the humor and metaphors, but it was more in-depth songwriting, I'd say, maybe more in the lyrics. And some of them I would also disagree on because they were from earlier and just brought in, like Every Man Needs a Chew and stuff like that. Even Manly Way, that was an early song too that we just kind of brought back.
Is that on Illusion and Doubt? Well, that's in Good Company.
No, that's Good Company, yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. I don't know my own albums, apparently. No, I just forget because I don't listen to them very much. Yeah. But I don't know. But to the most part, it's just like an experimentation and a growth process. One Arm Man was written entirely in metaphors. The whole song is metaphors. And that was so fun to do, you know. And then you go to Sugar and Joy. Fat Little Killer Boy, you know, was written in one day at my kitchen table. When I was sitting there, Colton wrote this cool ass banjo line. And I was like, all right, it's a weird banjo line. So let's get a weird song going, you know? Okay. Now hopping back to Illusion Doubt, Miss Mary, Colton writes another weird banjo line. Okay. Here goes a weird song to a weird banjo line. And I don't mean weird as in it's just too intricate. It's just weird as in it sounds good. And it gives you this feel of where's it going to take you? So I like so much from listening to Good Company to Illusion Doubt to Sugar and Joy, I guess even less so in The Ocean Went Mad, how everybody's parts, including the mandolin, the banjo, the cello, the vocals, the guitar, everything tells its own story. And the more we go, the more you can hear that happening. So that's a big maturity thing happening. Mm. You know, he listened to Massacre of El Karaoke. That's a big shout out to Karaoke, by the way. And the El Karaoke
Love
bar. Karaoke. Yeah. Which we should probably go to. Yeah. But, you know, the lyrics say one thing. Colton's banjo line says another. Scott's little, like, mandolin licks are saying a whole, like, it's just everything. And then Danny's bass line and cello parts, they have their own stories and melodies that people are listening to. And it's all maturing every time we go ahead, which I think is really cool. And that's why I like listening back on stuff. I like listening. When I listen back, I don't listen to my part so much. The first time's through, obviously, because you're doing recordings. You have to. And then after that, it's purely listening to what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's the coolest part about it. Mm-hmm. And then understanding how good the people are in your band.
Yes.
I'm surrounded by people that are so much better than me. It's incredible.
Well, I could say, like, listening to like Good Company, for example, like all your albums, and like the one constant theme I get is every song is highlighting something different.
Yeah.
But throughout the album, you highlight everything.
Yeah.
So there'll be a song with a sick banjo solo. There'll be a song with like a bridge with Danny's cello. And Scott, or say Scott's background vocal, his harmonies are just unreal.
Like, incredible, man.
And
his harmonies, fuck.
Yeah. And that's a big sound of your band. I mean, like, mandolin, and it's not every song, but it's the constants throughout the albums. That's what I see. And I've seen, like, a maturity in terms of your experimentation and your maybe more mature look into songwriting, if I could. You know, that's my interpretation. Take it with a grain of salt, like I said. But that's what I see from Ocean Went Mad and We Were to Blame, say to Sugar and Joy, where you are now. That's all I had. What's next for the Dead South? It is August 2020. Are you looking to play any live gigs anytime soon? We're living in a crazy world right now. So what's going on?
Not really. I mean... Would we love to? Yes, we've had to postpone 6 tours a whole year away.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So that's rough. So by the time we end up playing, it's I don't know. It's just nuts. It's a whole year away. But we're just working on stuff. We're working on getting projects out for you guys, those who want to listen. And that's what's keeping us busy. We're, you know, we're still kicking and thriving and getting better at different stuff. And, you know, when we do write a new album, it's going to be what it is and where we are at the time in our lives. So, you know, either like it or you don't, kind of thing. And I'm a big advocate for that. Either like it or you don't, and it's okay to have either. So
right, love it. Yeah. Can't wait to hear any new stuff. Love any content you guys put out. I guess all I could say is thanks, man.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for doing this.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
known each other for a long time, and we're both at Fishing Lake, sitting at Nate's cabin, August 2020. Appreciate it.
This guy plays in Hot Lettuce, by the way. Make sure you guys check out Hot Lettuce. Him and Brady.
Yeah.
This is a shout out number two. I did this in another podcast for these guys. So yeah.
This guy's always boosting people up. So I appreciate it. Thank you, man.